I'm Dale Jampgard from Portland, Oregon, and there I'm in private practice as a counselor and also work as the director of Quest Fellowship, which is a personal growth and change program for people. In private practice, I counsel with people concerned with personal, marriage, and family problems. And one of the things that caught my eye, as evidently did catch yours also, was a book with this title, Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by You? And I sense that that then is a question that is being asked by many people today as they deal with the whole issue of marriage. I'm going to talk about it in terms of marriage, but my sense is that what I'm talking about can be applied to any relationship. Where you want to have a friendship or some kind of ongoing relationship with a person. What I'm talking about here and what I'll do is present what's in this book and then we can react to it. I believe it will be applicable to any relationship that we're in. Now, one of the things that affects our mindset is the words of Jesus, and he quotes here some of the Old Testament. The Pharisees come to him and are testing him and seeing where he's at, and they say, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And he answered, have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And since one of the issues that we're dealing with is, does that mean that when two become one, that we lose ourselves in some way? That we become lost in a relationship? And that becomes a very pressing issue then in our day when we each as individuals are expected to function as individuals in our society, to each take responsibilities in the world. And as we have then moved away from a more differentiated role where men did one thing and women did another, and it was easier to see the complementarity, what we're faced with today is each having a need to having an identity, an individual identity in the world. When you go for a job, they don't say, well, let's see, now who is your spouse and how are you one with your spouse? They don't treat you as a couple. They treat you as an individual. And so we're being expected in many ways to function as individuals and yet function often then in the context of being married or in a relationship where we want, in a sense, to have a oneness or a shared life. And I sense that that's a lot of what the tension is in our day. We're not sure how to do that or what that entails. Another feature of that, and one of the reasons that I believe marriage is a major challenge today, is that in the past, many decisions in a relationship were determined for us by the roles that society designated. Who does what in a marriage? Well, of course, the man does this and the woman does this because these are the roles. The women essentially take care of the children. The man essentially goes out into the world. These past roles then helped us, you know, who takes out the garbage? Well, that was a little difficult, but it was thought maybe since it was out in the world, why the man should do it. But you see, a lot of these things we thought of in terms of role definitions, and therefore, as you think back in your family as you grew up, did you hear your parents negotiate? Or did you hear them maybe share an idea or two, and then one would decide? Or they would say, well, of course, you should do that, because you're the man or you're the woman. We tended to make decisions, therefore, without negotiation. And what is being called for today, then, with this new format where we say our roles do not determine who does what, because both of us have responsibilities in the world, Therefore, we need to negotiate who's going to do what. This last year, my wife kept getting home at about 6:30 in the evening from school. And if I wanted dinner before 8 o'clock, I needed to do something about it. And the negotiation was clear. Either you do something or you don't eat. But at that point, it would have done me no good to say, well, you're the wife, you should cook the meal. It wouldn't have solved the dilemma or the problem. Well, I've been interested in exploring this book, and would like to, what I'll do is just share some of the ideas that they bring. Paul Jordan and Margaret Jordan are both PhD psychologists and counselors in their own right, and yet also struggling with their own marriage relationship. And so they share a lot of themselves in this book, how they deal with situations. Essentially what they say is that any relationship involves conflict. There is always going to be differences between us in whatever relationship we're in. And it is not the conflicts that cause the problem. It is the way the conflicts are dealt with that cause the problem. And so what they pull together here is that there are basically two ways of dealing with conflicts. And depending on which way we use, we will end up with certain results. They say one basic approach to conflict is to be threatened by it in some way and have an intention then to protect ourselves. And there are a variety of ways you can protect. You can try to forcefully overwhelm the person, or you can protect yourself by becoming weepy and hurt and helpless, or you can protect yourself by using argument, rationale, logic. There are many ways of protecting. You can try to put the other person down, scare the other person, various ways. Okay. And that's what they mean by the intent to protect. What it does is often avoid personal responsibility for what's happening. We say, I have a problem because I have a conflict with that person, and if that person were different, then I wouldn't have a conflict and there wouldn't be a problem. And in that sense, we don't then accept responsibility. The alternative to that is to say that if there is a conflict, I am a part of creating the problem. Whatever the problem is, I am a part of creating. And that frees us to begin to take a look at what's happening. Now, in terms of then, how do we try to protect ourselves? They indicate three basic patterns. One is compliance. Because we have a conflict, I will kind of go along with you. I'm afraid that you, if I counter you in some way, I might get rejected or I wouldn't like the results. So I'm going to act like I'm going along. And that's the compliant. The control method is if there is a conflict, I will seek to control or manipulate you in some way. And the ways I just mentioned are ways where I might try to overwhelm you with power, anger, or I might try to use logic or argument as a way, challenging you, why do you do that, putting you on the spot. Or the other way of control is the passive control. Again, the weepy control, or I'm helpless, or I don't know what to do. Then a third way is indifference. And that is to say, because we have a conflict, I will act like you don't affect me at all. I don't care. You want to do that? Okay. That's your business. You can't hurt me. And we become indifferent to the situation. Now, what they do then is say that couples, then when they use a protective approach, They tend to build what they call protective circles, and this gets a little harder to read down here, but I'll read it off to you. And it's my hieroglyphics that I can understand anyway. Some couples develop a control, the C is control, control-control relationship. And that is where both are constantly trying to control the situation, and they're always in intention, fighting for some kind of power, fighting for control. Others build a relationship that is a control-indifference relationship. One person uses force or power or passivity to control the situation, and the other one acts like they don't care. And they've got that kind of a system going, a circle. The third is a control compliance, where one person is controlling, the other person just kind of goes along. Whatever you say, we'll go along. And what's going on inside that person? I'll do it, but I won't like it. Because often the compliant person really resents being controlled. And a person can live in that. Some of the strongest feelings I've known in terms of anger and hatred come from a person who has, for years, complied, gone along with, tried to please, tried to make everybody happy, and in a sense looks like, you know, a very loving person. But underneath this compliance is the feeling like they have no choice but to comply. That's the way they had to be. And when they finally begin to get some sense that maybe there's an alternative, then comes some of the anger and the resentment that was there all along. And often that anger and resentment has been stored up in the body. A lot of it right here. You know, we've heard of the Dowager's hump. That's when the anger energy runs up your spine and stops right here, where you take responsibility for the world and you stop all anger. And you tighten up there and you say, well, I'm going to do what needs to be done. And it builds up there. And then finally is another circle would be indifference, where two people don't really deal with the conflicts, but whenever there's a conflict, they act like they don't care, and they kind of find some way of smoothing it out, but increasingly they function then from a I don't care, you can't hurt me position, and everything's, you know, going to be okay. But increasingly then they begin to build a separation, a wall between themselves, and they begin to almost believe that nothing affects them or that they really don't care. And yet their needs then are often not being met in this relationship. So these then are described as the protective circles. The consequences coming out of this, pain, underlying resentment, loneliness, and we could go on. Inability to deal with conflicts, increasing inability. Sometimes in meeting the needs outside the relationship, avoiding the relationship more and more, getting involved more in work or some particular interest or extramarital affairs or whatever. Because often in these protective circles then, each person feels that they would have to completely change to meet the need of the other, and they refuse ultimately to do that, and so they seek in other ways to meet their needs. That then grows out of the intent to protect. The basis of that all is fear. That when we approach a relationship with fear. Now, that, how does that happen? We make this promise. I promise to love, honor, and cherish. Have you kept that promise? Have any of us? Because ultimately, we can't fully keep that promise. That none of us love perfectly, none of us honor perfectly or cherish perfectly. At times we can do one and not the other. And all of us also don't love and honor and cherish ourselves perfectly. to say nothing of someone else. We have that struggle going on in us, where we become critical of ourselves, we become dissatisfied with ourselves, we feel that we're not enough, and then also we turn that on others. You're not enough, somehow you're not meeting my needs, you're not what I had hoped you'd be. And often we don't even own these feelings, we don't want to deal with them, so we don't even let ourselves be aware of them. But they're there. So in that sense, when we get married, we don't fully know ourselves, and we don't fully know the person that we're marrying. And some couples go on then in their relationship and build the protective circles and really never get to know the person that they're married to, because they don't understand often why they're doing what they're doing or what it means to them. Now the person who says, oh, I know my spouse, I can tell you, you know, what they're going to do in any situation. That's the ability to predict behavior, but it is not the same as understanding why a person does what they do. And there's a real difference there. And I guess in counseling, I see some people that out in the world look like the happiest, most loving, caring, carefree people. You look at them and you say, wow, they just got it all together. And they come in and start sharing what's inside of them, and they're afraid, and they're angry, and they're hurt, and you just wouldn't believe what's going on underneath that behavior. So why we do what we do is very important to understand. And it's that then that the Jordans point to as the other approach. And that is that the other approach to conflict, when you have a conflict, it is an opportunity to learn. And if you approach it with an intent to learn, what is this about for us? What is this conflict saying about where we're coming from? It gives people an opportunity to begin to understand at a deeper level what's going on for them. It begins by assuming personal responsibility. If there is a conflict in a relationship, I am somehow responsible for that conflict. That is often difficult. If your husband is beating you, is it very easy for the wife to say, how am I responsible for this? It's pretty easy to say, look at that behavior. How can you justify anything? That husband is doing this to me, he's criticizing me, he's berating me, he's tearing me down, and what are you going to do with a husband like that? And it's so difficult at that point then to be able to say, how am I a part of this interaction that is bringing about this behavior that I don't like? But that becomes the beginning point. Yes?
Could you speak a little louder, please?
Oh, all right.
We have a hard time hearing back here when the refrigerator is running.
Great. Feel a little like I'm shouting already, but that's fine. I'll lift it up a couple decibels. Okay. Then to approach it in terms of learning. And the first learning is, what is this conflict about for me? What's involved? Why am I reacting the way I am? What am I afraid of? Just because my husband says I'm dumb doesn't need to mean I believe him. But I do. Well, why do I believe him? Why am I afraid when my husband says I'm dumb? Because I'm only afraid then if I believe I'm dumb. And it's a way of beginning to look at, what is this about for me? Why am I reacting the way I'm reacting to this situation? And then to begin to learn, where is my partner coming from? The conflict is often not about what we think it's about. And it, want to say this the way I thought it. I jotted down a note to myself. Conflicts are about more than we realize and usually less than we fear. I even wrote it down when I thought I had a profound thought. quote myself. Conflicts are usually about more than we realize and less than we fear. So, the idea then is to begin to discover, what's this about for you? Where are you coming from? And what is this about for me? Why am I reacting the way I'm reacting to this? And so then they talk about a process of exploration. That a conflict then is a point where you begin to explore what it's about. And one need is to be open to being affected. We may open ourselves up to some pain. We may hear some things we don't want to hear. We may become aware of some things about ourselves we don't want to know. And that takes courage. Paul Tillich calls it the courage to be who you are. And it's when we try to avoid those pains, we keep saying, I don't want to deal with what I think is there or what I think I am, that we get out of touch with ourselves and out of touch with each other. And so the first one is be open to being affected. It may hurt a little to move into it. But again, there is the promise that one can move through it, because you can then deal that finally, that's probably not as bad as continuing a relationship that becomes dead or sour over the years because we didn't deal with what was there. The second is that whatever a person is doing, there are important reasons to that person. Whatever a person is doing, it makes sense to them somehow to be doing that. No matter how erratic or irrational the behavior might be, in some way, it is making sense to them. And so you can have people doing really dumb, crazy things, but somehow, at some level, that makes sense. And to try to help them and yourself begin to tune in and understand, what's that about? And then also to begin to understand that usually an attack on you comes out of fear, and that ultimately an attack is a cry for help. Ultimately it says, hey, I'm in trouble and I'm trying to deal with it, and the only way I know how to deal with it is to attack you. But it's usually underlying a need of some kind that a person is experiencing. And then if we only react to the attack, we never get in touch with what the need was. Okay, and then areas to explore. The third aspect of the process, they suggest exploring, for instance, how does what's happening now relate to things that you experienced in your childhood? In other words, how did you learn to react the way you did? Because usually we learn patterns and we can explore that. What do you fear? What are some of your values or assumptions about life? A wife should always do this. A husband should always be this way. What are some of your assumptions that are behind the behavior that you're doing? These then are some of the areas. What are your feelings? And get below the feelings. You know, the initial feeling, the surface feeling may be anger. And underlying that, you may discover the hurt or the fear or the guilt. And so begin to look at the feelings and understand the feelings and what they're about. And then they feel, and their point is that when people begin to deal with conflicts in this way, and some conflicts they say will be resolved, you know, fairly quickly as people come to understand. Others may take a long time. This isn't any easy, you know, quick solve it process. Sometimes there are differences or parts of our personality that we don't understand. We don't know why we do things that hurt our spouse, and yet we do them. And we may even try to change them, and we don't know how to change them in some ways. And so these may not give way to a nice, easy solution, but at least two people are sharing how they're dealing with or struggling with their attempt to be more clear and be as loving as they can be. And so ultimately, what that leads to is an intimacy, intimate love. Some kind of, you can be more spontaneous when you really feel finally that you're able to share who you are with your spouse, rather than have to be who you think you expect and they expect you to be, and act accordingly. And there's, so that opens up the chance for more fun, if you're spontaneous. And you're more tuned into each other's needs, so you're more responsive. You understand where your spouse is at more. You can be more responsive to them and they to you. And that then provides the climate for what they call the evolving relationship, that one continues in a process and of opening up to one another and discovering oneself as well as the other in a kind of evolving experience. Okay, that's what they are talking about in this book. How does that fit, or what do you hear in it? Yes.
How do you go about, is there some guidelines to finding out where you're responsible? How can you figure out my responsibility in the relationship? If my husband's beating me, I would find it difficult to figure out, well, how am I responsible for that? Is there a guideline to figuring out what my responsibility is?
Okay.
Because if my husband's beating me, I kind of, well, why am I responsible for that? Or, I'm in this sense. How can I find out?
Okay.
If I look at it, I'm
the
only problem.
Yeah. Well, what I would do is first is explore what your feelings are. You know, what kinds of feelings do you have about yourself? And then, how do you tend to invite someone to be critical or to overpower you? Is the kind of question I would ask. And I would say, for instance, is there a possibility that you had a father who was pretty heavy and loud? But there are ways in which, if the husband says, shall we go out tonight? Let's go out bowling tonight. And the wife says, no, I don't really want to go out bowling tonight. And he says, what's the matter? Don't you ever want to do anything with me? And she says, well, yeah, I kind of want to do something with you. I really, you know. And she answers with a soft, inviting kind of voice that says, if you get louder, I'll get softer and weaker. And in that sense, it's kind of saying, go ahead and yell at me, and pretty soon I will give in and we'll go to the bowling. And it's by her response that she kind of invites the loudness and the power trip. Because what happens is, in his power trip works. If he raises his voice 10 decibels, then the wife collapses. And he says, all I need to do when I want my way is raise my voice, and it works. Or threaten to hit her, or, you know, in that way. And so as long as it works and isn't called into question in some way, isn't dealt with, then the person continues it. And so then I would raise, if that were your situation, then I would raise for you, you know, How do you feel? And you might say, well, boy, when he raises his voice, I really feel scared. I feel like a little kid. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And I say, okay, well, then where did you learn that? And we go back, and maybe you've had experiences like that where someone shouted at you and you felt helpless. And we begin to explore that. And then we'd say, you know, do you need to be afraid of him the way you were afraid as a little kid? Or what might be some of the options that you can look at? What are other ways of dealing with it? That would be a way I would take a look at that. Yes?
In that kind of situation, where does the person who does the yelling get to the insight that they're yelling because they're defensive? I mean, if you just decide what you're doing with it, that's maybe not helping them decide why they're doing that as a way of approaching you.
Okay. Now what? Okay. Now, what happens there then, if I'm the wife, and I've got a husband that's yelling at me, and if I come back at the husband and say, "You SOB, the way you treat me, you SOB, you wrecked my life, you tore me up, you've done everything to me," whatever way I deal with it, if I use a blaming way and don't take any responsibility, then I will just magnify the conflict. He will then justify what he's doing, and he won't look at his behavior, and I'm not going to look at mine, and we'll just be stuck in that. Now, if instead I say to him, and not right in the midst often of the event, but afterwards I say, "You know, when you start raising your voice, I really get scared. I'm really kind of afraid that you're going to kill me, or that you're going to hurt me so bad. And when I get scared, then I start acting like I'm helpless. And I feel like I did as a little kid with Dad when he would blow up. And it really hurts me. I really feel bad when you get loud like that. I would like to understand what it is that you need or what you want, but I don't I'm not able to understand at that point because I'm so scared." Now, all of a sudden, then, it's not a blame. It's saying, "Hey, this is how I'm reacting when you do that." And then he is more free at that point. Say, "Gee, I didn't realize, you know, that you were that scared. You always look so tough to me, or you always look so sure of yourself," or something like that. And then he says, "You know what? I start blowing up when I get afraid that you don't want to do anything with me," or, you know, and he begins then to reflect. And hopefully, at least, there's a much better chance of beginning to look at what's happening.
They suggest in the book whether this is best to be done with both spouses. I'm not talking about outside help, but internally, or is this, can one spouse pretty much learn a lot of this off just by taking it on? Or, you know, what I'm getting at, I guess. You have to have a contract to sit down and talk about this, or can you learn quite a bit? I can learn quite a bit from it. In fact, it seems to me I can apply it to work. I don't have as many, I don't have as many things at risk at work that I have in a marriage. There just seems to me to be, this intimate relationship has a lot more at risk, and I can see how that could apply real rapidly at work, just by me knowing when I have a conflict with somebody, being able to work through that. I have a little bit more trouble than trying to bring that into a marriage, because I'm comfortable with it maybe there, but it just seems like there's so much other things going around. So I'm just wondering how the author addresses that, or do they?
Well, two things. One is, yes, an individual can do it, because again, it will begin to defuse the situation just by one individual doing it. If, for instance, if I have a spouse, a wife who nags me all the time, and when she nags me all the time, I feel guilty and I feel bad about myself, that's a routine that we have going. Now, if I finally realize that I don't need to feel guilty every time my wife criticizes something I do, I can stop feeling guilty and I can start dealing with her nagging in a certain different way. When she nags, and rather than me saying, "Oh boy, I forgot that, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry, I intended to do all of that," rather than reacting that way, I can respond by saying, "I can hear that you're really angry that I didn't get that done, and what I'm understanding that you're wanting now is this." I begin to react in a different way, and her nagging then doesn't work the way it used to. And when a behavior doesn't work the way it used to, then a person tends to begin to give it up. Either that, or they'll nag all the more. That's true. A relationship often, when people stop playing the routine, a relationship often will get worse before it'll get better. Because oftentimes a person out of their fear, if nagging has always gotten you what you wanted and it's not getting what you want now, then you nag all the harder sometimes to just say, "Well, I must not be doing it enough." And so we lift it up a ways. And then finally we begin to realize maybe we don't need to nag to get what we want, and hopefully begin to find another way.
like that is a real tough situation when you have a spouse that is real compliant. And so if you get into, you know, wanting to understand the relationship and understanding your own reactions and so forth, and you try some of these approaches, and you have a spouse that just goes along with whatever you try, sometimes you really don't get anywhere.
So that a compliant spouse could learn this system and comply with this as well as anything else, and you still wouldn't know whether you're getting any place.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's hard to sometimes. It's hard for me sometimes to be intense enough in my approach to pull him out of his complaint.
Okay, so if you are trying to pull him out of his compliance, what role are you in? Of the protective circles.
Well, both of us tend to be a little compliant. And it's hard. It's
okay.
Tough. Okay. When I really want to approach a problem, and I really want to just back off and kind of be compliant too, but I know that something needs to be done, it's real tough to be forceful enough to really instigate some working at it
without getting angry or sarcastic.
Right.
Okay.
Or frustrated or giving up.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question, I don't know if all of you can hear. Can you hear over there? Okay, the question that's being raised is if you have a spouse who is very compliant, and then you try to raise some of these things, and they just continue to be more compliant with whatever you're trying to do, what do you do? And as you raised the question, where I picked up on a note, and that is, if I try to pull them out of their compliance, and the issue there may be that this couple may be locked in a control compliance protective circle. I'm trying to make this relationship work, and you're kind of just going along, and well, I've got this new method to make it work, and now I'm going to set up this new method, and so now I'd like to have you get on the bandwagon and get with it, and I'm going to control getting this thing going. So it's easy for the controller to pick up a new method and say, we've got a new way to make this work. And so it's easy to stay stuck in those approaches, the protective approaches. And probably the other alternative then is to begin to say, you know, you're compliant, and what I see you doing, and begin to talk about behavior. Because again, if you say to your spouse, you're compliant, what is that? That's a judgment. That's a judgment. You've already put the person in a box. If you say, when I suggest something and you just go along without letting me know what you feel, what is that?
Describing behavior.
That's describing their behavior. There's a difference between a judgment and describing what happens. When you say, you don't love me, see, what's the person going to do? Oh, yes, I do. When you say, after all, I give you a present for birthday. But when you say, hey, when you just seem to walk away when there's some free time and go off by yourself and leave me alone, you know, I feel like you don't care about me. And I feel lonely and feel left. And I begin to wonder whether you love me. That's describing behavior. And that helps them begin to take a look at what's happening. Or they begin to talk about where they're at. So the difference in arriving at this system would be for you to begin to own first that you're going to deal with where you're at. What am I feeling? When you go along with me when I suggest things without letting me know what you feel or what you want, I have a feeling that you don't really agree, but that you're just going along with me, and and it feels to me like ultimately I'm going to pay a price, something like that. And then the other person, then they can start dealing with it at that point.
They could start dealing with it, but chances are they won't. Mm-hmm. They'll be too scared, and they'll see it as nagging, or they'll take it to heart as somebody saying that's what you are. And then how do you deal with someone that is too scared to think about it and just draws a blank?
Okay, the other thing that they could do at that point then is to talk about, is there another way that we can deal with our conflicts? And maybe use a framework like this and just lay it out and say, this is what they say are two ways of dealing with conflict. Where do you see us on this chart? How are we doing? And how do we deal with things? And raise the question of how are we handling life? And see if you can talk about it.
I think compliance quite often, and I'm speaking for myself because I'm fairly compliant, I think, but it's the fear of accepting the responsibility of the outcome. You know, if you are compliant, then you can't really be blamed if it goes wrong. So it's a cover for the willingness of accepting the consequences of a decision. And it must go back to childhood. Everything does.
Well, sure. And it's a way that works. And so then to become aware of what is this fear of taking responsibility?
The fear of not being liked by everybody, you know? The fear of offending somebody. The fear of being criticized. Trying to be the good girl, you know, and everybody likes you.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. And so by then owning that, then you can begin to take a look at that fear and how realistic that fear is now. That may have been realistic for you as a little girl.
Right.
But it may not fit for now.
No.
That you don't need to be that afraid that everyone's going to reject you when you really look at what's happening around you. Uh-huh.
Because actually, by not accepting the responsibility or not being willing to accept the responsibility, you get much more uptight than if you just do what you can and accept the responsibility for the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. You know. And often then your needs don't get met.
Right.
Because the person who often is a complier often believes that if I please you enough, you will then ultimately take care of my needs. Uh-huh. But usually the person doesn't get back as much as they had hoped.
No.
And so there's some resentment.
Yeah.
Look at all I did for you, and you didn't finally do that for me. Yeah.
It all sounds good, but I don't think a couple would get too much accomplished on their own. I think it would work better with the counselor. Can they suggest a meeting third party?
Sure they do. And yet, with a book or something that maybe if they could look at it together and they could at least get started on it. If they're really locked in, you know, a major conflict, oftentimes it's hard to let down enough of the fear to begin to do that. And sure, as counselors, I'm sure they'd recommend use of counselors, as we all would. But I also really have a great deal of confidence in people's ability if they will just begin to take a look at what's possible.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
That's real scary.
Mm-hmm. And at times, what do you find at work? Is it very well accepted?
Well, I don't do it much.
Okay. What do you think?
I think probably it is at times when I have. It's just that I get sort of like a snowball rolling and tend to get too controlling at work. And then that kind of makes people upset and complain. it's a real hassle for that.
Okay.
And it's hard for me to express what I'm feeling, because what I'm feeling is a lot of fear. I'm afraid I'm not doing a good job. So I'm afraid I'll cry and fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a hard thing, is to figure out how vulnerable one can be at work. You know, with friends or with family, that's one thing, but at work is a whole other thing.
Yeah, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Is there a place for this at work?
It probably depends on how serious the problem is to her, because if it needs to be resolved, then you have, if you can't go on, then you have to take the risk of confronting people and trying to solve the problem.
You get sick. You don't care.
And even if you do break down and show that weakness, at least it's showing that you have a concern for this conflict and you want to work at being it, at having it resolved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would necessarily be interpreted as a weakness. It might be interpreted as a strength, the fact that you can come out and say what you feel in this non-intimate situation. In other words, in general, you can express your feelings. You're big enough to get up and tell relatively strangers what you think. And you can talk about it, and quite often you'll find that they'll respond to that quite well.
But how would you feel if you started to cry?
Well, it's show your emotion, right? It's genuine.
I think there's a real difference, especially in the work situation. For me, it's knowing that I do have to be strong in certain situations. And there's a real difference between telling somebody my emotion and showing it. And so for me, it's important in a formal situation, be it with school board members or whatever it is, to express it versus show it. And a person can learn to say, I'm angry or I'm sad, and feel it, but not have to break down. I think that's important in a formal situation.
And I think we're talking here about this issue of taking responsibility at work. I think letting oneself be vulnerable and being responsible for whatever it is that's happening, and saying, you know, I have these fears or I'm dealing with this, I think would usually be accepted pretty well. If there's any sense that the person gets that one is saying, I'm so scared, I can't do this, where our feelings become an excuse and as a way of not taking responsibility. I'm going to be open and vulnerable so that I don't have to take responsibility for this, then I think it would not be welcome. It'd be a reaction to it. So there's kind of a difference in the way I think a person would do it.
It gives me a lot of permission just to take it from intent to protect to intent to learn.
Yeah.
And in the case that was being presented about at work, I think if I'm telling somebody I'm doing this to learn something about myself, that's really acceptable, because at work they want you to learn about the job and be more efficient and do things. And if you say learning, that's a real acceptable word.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I think that this would work. You know, there are some situations I know I can apply it right away and not be threatened by it. And of course, to take the biggest conflict in my marriage and try to put this on it right this minute may or may not work, but I'm just saying I don't have any confidence in it. I might test somebody at work that's a little bit, that I know I have a sense of where they would lean if I do show feelings and I do, so to speak, break down, that I can test it there. And then having get some confidence in that, I can build it up to use it in any sense of conflict rather than the big grandiose one, you know, the first time.
Sure, sure.
What I get out of this conversation is that people are less afraid to face the conflicts at work than they are to face the conflict at home.
Okay.
I'll second that. I've said it several times.
But see, I have exactly the opposite feeling.
So
I have given an overwhelming amount of power to, and I don't trust the people that I work with. And I find that, you know, I feel very vulnerable to them. I feel like they can really you know, eat me up and spit me out in little pieces. And yet, at home, the relationships that I have there, the one underlying thing that exists is that there is, I have a love bond with the members of my family, and so I can allow myself to be much more vulnerable with them. And so I feel good.
I think it's probably more true for women in many instances to be able to be more vulnerable in the home situation than in work, yeah. And more true for men to be more vulnerable at work.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, women play games real bad, and I find the men I work with I can deal more upfront with. Women, the women I deal with, play games, and when I try to be upfront and honest with them, they don't like that at all. And so for myself, I find it easier to work with men.
I feel
they don't play games.
Mm-hmm. I think women are brought up to play games.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm aware of in approaching this is really being in touch with that we often are not very aware of why we do what we do. That we can start giving some reasons, and it's useful to realize that when you say, well, you know, why do you do this? That a person may be able to say, well, I've got some of these feelings, but they may not really be in touch with it. I guess an example from my own life is that with my wife, for instance, I like to touch and I like to hug. And yet what I found was that often at night I would not hug my wife and go to sleep. And she, like after lovemaking, she would often say, you know, I'd like to have you hold me until we go to sleep. What I found was if I held her, I would stay wide awake like this. I was very alert, and I couldn't understand why. What was that about? And then, I'm not sure this is why, but anyway, some of the information that I've gotten, one is that my mother had abscess breasts, and so the sense I've got of what it was like to be a child, my mother died when I was 17, so I didn't have a chance to check it out at all with her, but my father said that I cried all the time as a baby, and wasn't getting enough to eat. And what would evidently happen is that I would be pulled towards her and start feeding, and then she would be hurt and maybe push me away. And so the feeling I have is like when I'm close like that, that I have to be alert or ready to get pushed away. And as I became aware of some of what that was about for me, then I've been able to say, you know, hey, I don't need to worry about that. I can begin to let go and can let go and go to sleep. But at first I didn't understand why I was reacting the way I was. And so part of the sharing is that kind of exploring, what is that about for me? Why do I react that way? See, my wife could say, oh, you don't care about me. Why do you want to sex? You don't care about me. You don't love me, I know. See, and if she would come at me with that, I'd be defensive. Well, yeah, I love you, you know, and I don't know why, I couldn't deny that I wasn't doing it. But using a learning method and beginning to have enough trust to explore, we can begin to understand what's behind some of our fears and why we're doing what we're doing and where it's come from. And then she can say, oh, now I understand, you know, it's not that you don't love me. It's something that you learned in the past. It's no big deal. It wasn't what I was afraid it was.
And I think it's the same with me, with my fear of responsibility, because my parents got divorced when I was 14, and I never got over the feeling that maybe I was responsible.
Yes, okay. You probably put your finger on a real key there that can help
and
you.
And my father moved out, and to this day, my husband will tell you, he has had lots of problems with that. If he has to go on a business trip, it might be 2-3 weeks, I totally fall apart. Yet if I'm the one that goes away, No problem. Desolate. I feel like I've been dropped, he's gone, that's it. And yet when I go, is that because I feel in control, I suppose? When I go, I am the one that's leaving, rather than being left.
And you just tell him to look after the cats.
Okay.
And I cannot get over that.
Okay, let me suggest, something that you can do in that kind of a situation is just get in a very relaxed state and go back in your mind to the time and let yourself remember all you can about the pain and the hurt and the fear of that time and how you may have picked up that feeling of guilt. And then with your mature self, almost as though you can see yourself go back, be with yourself, your little 14-year-old girl self, and comfort her and take care of her and help her know what it is she needs to know in order to let go of that.
Yeah.
And that you can actually do that process yourself and go back and in that sense bring a healing, bring the Spirit of Christ to you at 14. That 14-year-old is still inside of you, afraid and scared and guilty. And you can go back to that 14-year-old and help resolve that in that way.
Yeah. Thank you.
One more? Okay. Let's go eat.